Scooter Show. Sound bites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the, I want to say, 18th day.
Yep.
Of May, Anno Domini 2019. I don't do time,
man.
These
all blur together when you're retired.
Exactly. Is it Saturday already?
Yeah, the only day you have to do something.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Right. Jeez, and crackers, you aren't kidding. And blah, 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 sound bites. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 7 minutes after the hour, so sit back and relax, and we'll do the news. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
He must be new at this.
Yeah, I'm new at this. I am. Spyware crafted by an advanced cyber actor infected multiple targeted mobile phones through the popular WhatsApp communication program without any user intervention using in-app voice calls. The Financial Times identified the actor as Israel's NSO group, and a WhatsApp spokesrobot later said, "We're certainly not refuting any of the coverage you've seen." The malware was able to penetrate phones through missed calls alone via the app's voice calling function. An unknown number of people were infected with the malware, which the company said it discovered in early May. John Scott Railton, a researcher with the internet watchdog Citizen Lab, called the hack a very scary vulnerability. "There's nothing a user could have done here short of not having the app," he said. The WhatsApp spokes robot said the attack had all the earmarks of a private company that has been known to work with governments to deliver spyware that has the ability to take over mobile phone operation systems. The spokes robot said WhatsApp, which has more than 1.5 billion users, immediately contacted Citizen Lab and human rights groups, quickly fixed the issue, and pushed out a patch. He said WhatsApp also provided information to U.S. law enforcement officials to assist in their investigation. All brands of phones with WhatsApp or WhatsApp Business installed are infected, including Apple's iPhone, Android phones, Windows phones, really, and Tizen devices, or Tizen if you prefer, according to Facebook. WhatsApp is used by 1.5 billion people globally. If you aren't receiving any WhatsApp voice calls or dropped calls from unknown parties, then you have probably not been targeted. But if you happen to be a lawyer or work in sensitive industries and use WhatsApp even for personal correspondence, you should be especially vigilant. Facebook implemented a server-side change to help protect users and push out updates for the various smartphone WhatsApp versions on Monday. That's right. Facebook did that. Users are strongly advised to check for updates manually through the App Store, the Apple App Store on an iPhone, Google Play, or similar on an Android device, Microsoft Store on Windows phones, and the Galaxy App Store on Tizen devices. Failing that, uninstalling WhatsApp from your phone will protect you from the attack. WhatsApp, by the way, is a subsidiary of Facebook, of course. So again, no poll yet. I don't like anything I've seen and played with. Are you a WhatsApp user? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. This is particularly insidious and is really the start of a lot of this kind of stuff because you don't have to do anything except have WhatsApp on your phone. We've known for the longest time that the actual Facebook apps like Facebook Messenger and Facebook itself are snooping in your phone and looking at all the stuff that you've got. We know that. We've known that for a long time. But this newest thing, and WhatsApp does the same thing. It's a Facebook product. But now it's actually vulnerable to this attack where you don't even have to do anything. You get a call that drops immediately. And by then, they're already in your system and taking over and getting all of your information and all of your data. So if you have WhatsApp, you're probably hit. And it might be a good idea to dump the app and then reinstall the new one from the App Store, your App Store.
And even if you had it and haven't used it in a long time, if you didn't actually delete it from your phone, it may still be on there and running.
That's exactly right. If you've got it at all, dump it immediately because it's infected. The likelihood is that it's infected. And if you still need WhatsApp, download it from the your App Store. But if you haven't used it in months, don't reinstall it. Just don't do it. It's too bad because WhatsApp is a very clever idea.
And it always was end-to-end encryption.
Right, that's the point.
And we're not sure if Facebook has changed that or not.
Right, well, right. And it's end-to-end encryption through their servers, so Facebook still gets to see what you do. You're not safe. You're not protected from Facebook, but you are protected from other people.
It originally was encrypted on your device.
Right.
And so all Facebook have would be the encrypted bits. But since they wrote the program, they can install a key.
That's right.
And probably have, so they can probably decrypt it themselves.
That's right. Don't ever trust Facebook. Yeah. Ever.
We don't know they've done that, but probably.
Right. Right. What do they say? The race doesn't always go to the swift nor the fight to the strong, but that's the way the smart money bets?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So be very careful. And before we go to the phones, let me just say one more thing. I'll mention this again. Bless you, my son. In the second half of the show, Fran Younger's doing it again, donating her time and expertise to help train cardiothoracic surgical staff in Tanzania. Her husband Bruce is going along because, hey, Tanzania. And he'd like to bring some computers for the children to use while they're recuperating from their heart surgery. Because they're four recovering children, nothing fast-paced or high-powered is needed. Something that plays simple games is fine, although some of the staff wouldn't mind something that did documents and spreadsheets, too. Fast-paced, high-end games tend to be monopolized by the older children, leaving the younger ones out in the cold, so any old but definitely working computers is the sort of thing he's looking for. They don't have internet there, so it doesn't matter if it's an XP machine or whatever, but they would love it if you would actually install some kids' games on it before you send it, because they don't have internet access. And if you're interested in helping out this great cause, you can find more information at both the Jazz 90.1 and Soundbites websites. And now we will go to the phones. Our first caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. Hi, Larry. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. Once again, early and often.
There you go.
Hopefully not that often. So back from last week, I was having trouble trying to figure out whether or not I had GNOME 3.32 actually installed versus 3.28.
Yep.
One of the last callers called in about a package called Synaptic.
Yes.
So I downloaded it immediately, kind of figured out how to look through everything that's installed. It does not record 3.32 at all. Everything it has here and a jillion different something or others is all 3.28.1 or 2. So when I go back to the Ubuntu software and look at it, it still says it has 3.28. So don't know what to do about that.
Okay, I guess
I'll have to trust Synaptic.
Yeah. Synaptic, but for everybody else, is a graphical package management tool for Ubuntu and any Debian based system, and it basically is a graphical front end to the apt package manager system.
Uh-huh.
That normally runs from the command line. So if it's saying that you only have 2.8 installed, then you only have 2.8 installed. And have you tried installing the next version up to, what is it, 3.2? I think it is.
I have not tried that. No.
Yeah, 3.32 is it? Anyway, the point is, try installing that through Synaptic and see what happens.
Okay, I will do that.
Yeah, see what happens.
Then my second question is, I purchased another drive, 1 terabyte drive for my backup. However, when I start looking at the backup software available, there's a lot of it and it's confusing. I do have something called Deja Dupe that comes with Ubuntu, but the latest reviews of it are not good. And when 33% of the people say they don't like it. That's enough to get my attention. So I'm wondering if there's another package out there, or you may have something that you like to use and you wouldn't mind recommending over the air.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them that are actually built, that actually come with Linux and with Ubuntu in particular. The one most people really like is Bacula.
Bacula, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That like Dracula, but Bacula.
Right.
And it's it comes with most Linux distributions actually. It also supports Windows if you're one of those, but it does a whole lot of stuff, and it's really well known and well liked. There's also a program called Amanda.
Okay, I saw that one too.
Yeah, which also does much of the same thing. One of the nice things about Amanda is that it's you can use it as a server for multiple machines on your network.
Okay, and that's the one thing that had put me off about both of them. They kept saying servers and systems, and you know, I'm running one machine here, so I'm thinking, maybe this is not what I want. But if you're recommending them, I'll go ahead and decide which one, say a Bacula or Amanda, that I want to use. And we'll go from there. But as I said, I go to Deja Dupe, and they're not real. The users of it aren't real thrilled at all. So that's enough to put me off.
Right. There's also one called Time Vault, I don't know if it comes with Windows with Linux anymore. But
okay.
At any rate, Time Vault is equivalent to those of you who have Macs. You know the Time Machine
for Mac.
Yeah, Time Vault is very similar to that. But
I'll look it up and see if it's available.
Yeah, all three of those are. I mean, there's a bunch of others. Clonezilla, la 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 la. But the top three really are, and in order generally, are Bacula, Amanda, and Time Vault.
Okay. That should do it. Hopefully, I don't have to call back.
Yeah. Well, we like hearing from you, Larry. All right, have fun.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Although real geeks will use rsync at the command line.
No. I do.
No.
I use rsync to back up to a server out on the internet.
Literally?
So I have an off-site.
Yep.
Not just off-device, but off-site storage.
Yeah.
Again, I'm on Greenlight, so that took, even the first time, was pretty fast, but of course the incremental backups are very, very, very quick. Back to the phones, and our next caller is, I hope it's a different Larry from Rochester. Welcome, Larry, what's up?
Hi, thank you very much. I have a question about synchronizing a password manager over multiple platforms and operating systems. During the week, I tried to put Bitwarden on my Windows 10 PC. Unfortunately, when I went to my Pixel 2 XL, I was dead in the water as far as auto-filling in passwords. I have since done some research and discovered, I guess, Chrome for Android will not support extensions, which is, I think, what stopped me there. So my basic problem, I want to use a password manager on a Windows 10 laptop, a Samsung tablet, and a Pixel 2 XL phone. I guess I need another web browser than Chrome for Android.
No, you can do it with Chrome. Do you use Chrome?
I can't. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Do you use Chrome across all of those platforms?
Yes.
Then you can sync Chrome itself if you want to. But there's.
I understood the password manager was more secure.
It was about to say, but a password manager itself would be more secure. LastPass should work on all of those.
How does Bitwarden get an extension into Chrome for Android to work then?
You load the with Bitwarden, they have a version in a Google Play Store that you have to load.
Right. With all of these, you load a separate.
I'm sorry. So I put the Bitwarden app on my Pixel 2 XL, but the web pages would not autofill. I had to go to Bitwarden, copy the password into the login box on the website.
Oh, that's interesting. I use NPass, and it does that for me fine. I don't have Windows. I have Linux.
The Chrome? the Chrome for Android browser on 2XL, on a Pixel 2XL.
Right, right. That's what I use. Well, really? I have a Pixel XL, not a Pixel 2.
I'm sorry. Okay.
But it works.
Interesting.
And that's called NPass. I'm told LastPass also does. There's also a couple of others that you can pay for, like Zoho and Dashlane and AgileBits and TrueKey. But I would at least give something like NPass a try before I went and paid for something.
Okay. I really didn't want to go to Firefox or something, but that the buddy that was helping me through this said when he saw that the Chrome for Android web pages that I allegedly had, not allegedly, I had accounts for registered with Bitwarden. The login page for meetup.com, the page would come up, but the login and the password box would not autofill in. When I looked, there was no Bitwarden icon to click on.
Yes, I do understand that. And that, so what I'm saying is I use NPass. And when I tap in the, you know, fill in your name box.
Yes.
I have to wait a quarter of a second, but then NPass actually brings up my username and password in a little pop-up, and I click on that, and I tap on that, and it fills it in, and I hit enter, and off it goes.
And according to the Bitwarden blogs, you need to have Android 8 Oreo or greater. And they include an autofill framework that will let you autofill into your existing web browser and other apps. So maybe you just didn't get it installed completely.
I have two alternatives, and I will try them both. Yep. One was to make sure the Chrome is Android 8 or greater, and the other one was to try NPass.
Right. Well, no, I think you said the Android version needs to be 8 or greater.
Yeah, you have to have Android Oreo or greater, and you have to have installed and enabled the autofill framework.
I will check my phone's stats. Yeah. I'll see what the operating system is on my phone.
Yeah, in general, of course, you should always upgrade to the latest, particularly on Pixels.
Oh, I always do. If they want to push an update, I take it.
Good, good. Okay, give those a try.
All right, thank you.
Good
Bye-bye.
Luck.
Have they announced what... what are they up to now? Q is going to be.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen it. They've argued about it. I know they're arguing about it.
Apparently, there's no common English desserts that start with a Q, but there's one in French.
Right.
Yeah.
Hold on. Right. Do you think somebody would have thought about that? Oh, back around A. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Doug from Holly, New York.
Hi, gentlemen.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm doing well.
What can we do for you?
I have a network attached storage device that it's about 10 years old, and I'm looking to replace it.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah. So maybe a year or two ago, I replaced the original drives that were in. It was a Seagate, and I put some Western Digital larger capacity drives in there.
Oh, yeah.
So what I want to do is my upgrade to a newer diskless enclosure. What I'm finding is Seagate isn't really in that business except at a really high end, and I'm looking at not spending that much. So my question is, if I purchase another brand, what would be my issues with transferring the data from the old to the new?
Well, transferring the data should be fairly simple. You should be able to bring both up on your desktop.
Okay, without disks. The one that's working right now.
See. You want to take the disks out of the one and put it in the other.
Okay.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Then that's simply a matter of shutting them down. Well, before you buy, you need to know how the current hard drives connect into the network. Are they SATA? Are they whatever they are?
Mm-hmm.
And I would be afraid if you go with a different brand, it wouldn't work anyway because it would want to erase the drives to reset it up as its own NAS format. That's what I've seen with all the multi-drive arrays.
And I would think, I think it would have to have the same version, too, because even a slight modification, the system would say, well, wait, no, it wasn't created with this. It's, like you said, it's going to wind up wanting to reformat.
Yeah.
Okay, so what I did about a year ago was the original Seagate drive. One of them failed, so I bought two Western Digital larger capacity drives, and I kind of, put one of the 2 terabyte in and then copied what was on the one working 1 terabyte drive to it.
Sure.
Okay, so that part, I've got a handle on that, but what I'm concerned about is that it's going to be on different hardware.
Right. Well, you might a NAS technology system does have its own little operating system built in. So Steve is right and Dave is right. You'll never hear me say that again. another county heard from. It may be that it will want to reformat. So your best bet. From what I can hear, you have a second drive that you never installed yet?
No. Originally, a 2-bay, and one of the drives failed. And what I did was I went and bought 2 new Western Digital drives, larger capacity, and I pulled a 1 drive out of the Seagate that wasn't working. Or the one that was bad.
Right.
And then I put in one of the 2 terabyte drives in its place, and then I copied the data from the working drive. It's in the RAID system.
And then you replaced the other drive.
Right. And then and they were, 2 different manufacturers. The original enclosures, Seagate, and then the drives were Western Digital.
Yeah, that's not a problem. But if you try to go from a Seagate NAS to a G drive NAS, mm-hmm. or Buffalo or Synology or one of the other NAS companies, that probably won't work, and it will probably want to erase the drives to set it up for its own NAS.
So your best bet at this point would be to make sure you have backup somewhere off the NAS.
Okay.
And then move the drives over. If nothing else happens, you're done, you win. If it wants to format it, let them format it, and then you put your data back that you backed up.
Or if you get a new NAS with new drives, then you mount them both and copy from one to the other.
Right.
Hmm. Well, it'd be a bare enclosure. I'm looking at just...
Right, so the first route that I mentioned is the one you want to go with.
Okay.
Okie doke, we got to take a break.
All right, thank you for your help, guys.
Thanks. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Ed from Ithaca, New York, on the line. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Hi. 2 questions. One is very quick. A few weeks ago, you mentioned that you can turn off a Windows PC and push, I think it was either the shift key, I wasn't sure which, that completely clears it so it opens afresh without any memory of what was up on the screen.
I'm not.
Anytime you restart Windows, it doesn't remember anything that was there.
Well, if you do a cold restart, it doesn't remember. If you do a warm restart, it doesn't clear memory.
Okay, so what is the clean restart?
Power off completely.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, I thought you said something about holding down the shift key or the control key or something while you did that.
Well, that will let you restart into safe mode.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. No. It's a different thing. So it's the clean boot that you want to do, and that's just shut it down and open it up again.
Right. Okay. Great. Thank you.
Sure.
Now, the more important question is I have a HP printer, a 4100, which was working fine until a couple days ago. It started printing just blank pages. I want to print a single page, and it prints about 30 blank pages. And I shut it down. I shut down the computer, and it still does that.
Have you tried uninstalling, reinstalling the drivers?
No.
One of the updates could have very well, because they use a number of universal drivers within Windows. And if you go to the website, first uninstall it. Revo Uninstaller does a great job of uninstalling the printers.
Okay.
So uninstall the printer, reboot, go up to the website for the printer and get the latest and greatest drivers and try reinstalling. One of them might have gotten mucked up due to one of the updates in Microsoft Windows.
Okay. I will give that a try. My recollection is that it happened without any updating in between.
One thing I would try before I do all of that is from the printer itself, print out the test page.
Oh.
If it does not print, you've got other troubles.
Okay.
Did you recently replace the toner by any chance?
Nope.
Okay. Because sometimes people forget to forget to peel off the the seal.
Oh.
it happens.
Yeah. It happens. The first thing I would do is print the test page from the printer itself.
Mm-hmm.
That if that prints, then you know the problem is the driver, and you do what Dave said.
Okay.
If not, it could be could be a bad solenoid, could be a main motor not turning the drum. It could be 100 things, but at that point, it's a new printer.
We've seen that occasionally, especially in the Mac graphics world, where you're trying to send a PostScript file to an ASCII printer, and instead of interpreting the PostScript, it prints the codes, which it can't print, so it just spits out blank pages.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm just trying to print a regular document.
Right. Anyway, give those things a try.
Okay, I will do that. Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Bye.
Yep. One of the first things always to try is for troubleshooting is figure out which end has the problem. So in a printer, you've got two ends, the computer and the printer. Try the printer first. It has a built-in self-test. And if you run that self-test, it should print out a page that it says a bunch of things on it. And if it does not print out that page, if it throws a blank page out instead, then you know the problem is definitely at the printer and not at the computer. And that's how you can at least start to troubleshoot where you go next. Okay, our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hiya, Mark. What's up?
Hi, guys. How are you doing today?
Peachy, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm slowly getting myself into hardware from software. Ooh. And it's been a lot of fun. And I took my old gateway that's from 2012, and it doesn't owe me anything. It's still running. And even though the 1 terabyte hard drive in there reports is still being good. I use Crystal Disk Info on it to just see how it was doing, and so far so good. I was at the big box store and I saw a PNY SSD, and it was really affordable. And I said, you know what? Let me try it. I brought it home, and I disconnected the other drive and I installed it. And I had a fresh copy of Windows, and for some reason I could not get it to boot from the USB, so I had to do a DVD. And that worked, and it only took 10 minutes to install.
Sure, because it's an SSD.
Fast, even from the DVD, and I'll tell you what, I just breathed new life into this computer.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was originally updated from Windows 7, and it never ran right.
Yep.
I downloaded that ISO and put it on and had it create a DVD, and I'll tell you now, it runs like a dream. It boots in 15 seconds.
Yep. SSDs are great stuff. You know, you can also put your 1 terabyte back in.
I did.
As a second, there you go.
I did, and then I directed everything over to that, which would be now the D drive.
Right. So all your data are being saved on the D drive.
Right.
But all the parts of Windows come off of the C drive.
Right.
Nice
all
idea.
All the caching, I moved all the caching over to that drive.
Yep.
and moved everything over, and it runs like a dream. And I said, you know, this drive seems like it's a little cheap, but the computer is from 2012, and I spent very little on that drive. And I go, you know, even if it fails in a year,
yep,
it doesn't owe me anything. I only paid $22 for that 120 gigabyte flash drive.
Yep. That's just it. How much? 120 gig?
It was 120 gig. It was 21 something. It's a PNY. If you went to like 120 gig Western Digital or Seagate, they were probably $40 or $50 more for the same thing.
Yep, I've done that to several machines with mostly the same idea, 120 gig drives, which are cheap, easily under $30, no matter where you get them.
I'm looking at some 4 terabyte drives that are over 1,000.
But I put Linux on them because I have because license is free for Linux and I don't want to pay for Windows. But they do. They boot in 10 seconds. They do everything you need to do super fast. Even an old machine that's kind of slow and clunky, you breathe new life into it that way.
Right, and that machine came with 8 gig. Unfortunately, it maxes at 8 gig, but that's okay. It runs super with this new drive, and like I said, even if the drive fails in a year or two, it doesn't owe me anything, especially at that price.
That's exactly right.
I know it's a PNY. It's not the best in the world, but when I was looking online I bought it before I even used it, and they were rated fairly well for a lower-end drive.
Right, they're a decent low-end drive.
Yeah.
And you're right. For $22, you know what you're getting.
Right.
And you can't complain.
And rated better than the SanDisk.
Yep.
So
good for you.
I love it, and now I've got two PCs that are running really nice, and I can't complain. And I tell anybody now, you know, if you only have just a little bit of knowledge, you can put that hard drive in there and bring new life in your computer.
Yep, it isn't difficult to do, and it's a very inexpensive but really impactful upgrade.
Yep, the hardest part I had was recovering the partitions on the original terabyte drive.
Right.
Because they were protected partitions.
Right.
From the original operating system, and I found a free program just by doing a little research that I could download and use, and allowed me to reallocate that space, delete it, and then merge it back into the original partition.
Perfect.
So it's not that hard.
Good for you.
Yep. Lots of fun.
Well done, Mark. Have fun.
All right. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, a lot of people ask us about upgrades and what's better, an SSD or RAM. And the answer is both.
Yeah.
So
particularly when they're not that expensive.
Yeah. Well, it depends on what you have now. If you've got if you've only got 2 gigs of RAM, you'd probably be better off with RAM.
Right.
But if you've got 4 gigs or 8 gigs especially, then the SSD will make it better.
Right.
Well, you got to see what operating system you're running.
Yeah.
Right. Because a 32-bit version of anything is not going to take advantage of anything more than 4 gig.
Yeah.
Actually, 3.2
the bigger gig. In that case, then you'd want to move over to the bigger hard drive.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. In fact, one of the laptops that I'm configuring for the folks in Tanzania has a very inexpensive SSD card in it. It's running Linux because I don't want to pay for Windows. But it's running Linux, and it boots up, and it's an ancient machine. It's a Pentium machine of some sort.
Wow, that is old.
That is old. It is ancient. I told you it's ancient. It's only got 2 gig of RAM. It still boots up in 10 seconds.
Yeah. Most new laptops today are coming with solid state drives. And even a lot of desktops now are coming with solid state. They generally cost more than an equivalent spinning drive. But more people like the speed rather than the capacity. And if you're lucky enough to have two bays, you get one SSD for speed and then one spinning drive for capacity.
That's what Mark did. But a lot of people are doing that. They boot up super fast. In fact, I still am running spinning drives on my desktop, and I rebooted the other day, because I got a nice update from Linux. We'll actually talk about why you need to do that now. But it took like a minute and a half, and my heart was in my throat. I went, oh, my God, what happened? Oh, that's right. It's spinning drive.
Yeah.
Because my Chromebook's open in 8 seconds. My desk, my Linux laptop opens in 10 seconds. So 8 seconds. So, yeah.
I was playing with configuring an Alienware high-end gaming laptop, and the 4 terabyte drive was more than the whole rest of the laptop.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Especially for we were talking about that during the break. Is that drives below a terabyte are still are really cheap. $120 for $20.
Yeah, right.
So terabyte drives, you're probably a little under 100. 2 terabyte drives, a little under 200. 4 terabyte drives really start jumping up there.
Yeah. But if you're going to be a gamer and you want your game online and you want it super fast, that's how you do it.
Especially if you're interacting with other folks.
Right.
Because it is set to real time and trying to, interact with your friends. And doing some of these games, it's critical.
That's right. This is an interesting news story. In January of 2018, a pair of security exploits dubbed Spectre and Meltdown showed how attackers could take advantage of commonly implemented CPU technology to access data they shouldn't have been able to. These were followed by a similar bug, Foreshadow, late last year. And now researchers have uncovered 4 different techniques that exploits Intel's speculative execution technology in a similar way. The vulnerabilities are collectively referred to as microarchitectural data sampling, or MDS. It includes zombie load, RIDL, fallout, and store-to-leak forwarding. Example code shows how the attacks could be launched using malicious JavaScript, for example, so you could get it from a web page or an ad, and researchers state that it would be difficult for antivirus software to detect it. However, they have not found any evidence of anybody using the tech in attack so far. If you have a computer using an Intel CPU, that's most likely you, released since 2011, then congratulations, you've likely won a vulnerability.
And some AMD CPUs also.
Right. Since only select 8th and 9th gen core CPUs, as well as 2nd generation Xeon scalable CPUs, have hardware protection against the attacks. AMD and ARM have both made public statements that the attacks and vulnerabilities related to MDS do not affect their chips, but we have since found out that some AMD chips are, because they so closely mimic Intel chips, are vulnerable. According to Intel's microcode update guidance, most Intel Core and Xeon chips dating back to 2011 are theoretically vulnerable to MDS-related flaws. However, Intel said that the new MDS class of flaws is addressed in hardware starting with selected 8th and 9th generation Core CPUs. Patching the holes will require a combination of firmware updates and software updates. Mac OS, Windows, Chrome OS, and Linux already have software updates to address the MDS attacks. I updated this machine this morning. While Intel has also released microcode updates for some of its hardware that you should get through motherboard or system vendors. Just like Spectre and Meltdown, the fixes are expected to have an impact on performance. How much? Intel says the hit could be as little as 9% on select data center workloads post-migration. That's a lot of weasel words for one sentence. Apple is more honest. It found, as much as a 40% reduction in performance with tests that included multi-threaded workloads and public benchmarks, depending on the system. You can check your vulnerability by using the code at mdsattacks.com. All Intel-based systems are vulnerable, which leaves out most phones and tablets, so most of them are secure, and many older Chromebooks. Chrome OS has been updated already, so you might notice a slight slowdown. I did not notice a slowdown on this machine here today. Make sure you update. Are you updated? Are you worried? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Steve Gibson at GRC also has a little utility called Inspector that will tell you if your Spectre and Meltdown protections are available and or turned on. One of the, I guess...
Well, but this isn't Spectre or Meltdown. This is Riddle or Fallout,
right,
or
newer
two
ones,
others.
Yeah, he's probably going to add it to those too. One of the things we've seen is that there haven't been any exploits in the wild. There's only been demos of potential exploits. So some people who don't want to lose that 40% speed hit haven't installed them yet.
Right.
So it's nice that you can turn them on and off if you need to.
Right. But you should check your system to see if it is vulnerable. Hint, it is.
Yeah.
And update everything, including the microcode in your motherboard, and that comes through your motherboard manufacturer. So be careful and make sure you do that. If you're running a hub of some sort that uses an Intel chip, or a router that uses an Intel chip, then you had best check to see if there's an update for that as well. So it's laptops, desktops, routers, hub devices of whatever sort. Not most phones or tablets. They're running some other, an ARM processor, an AMD processor type thing, mostly ARM. So, but be aware and be careful. Make sure you have some idea whether or not your machines are vulnerable and protect them if they are. Yes, you will lose speed, but on the other hand, you don't lose your privacy or security. Yeah, somebody taking over your machine could cause all kinds of havoc and steal all kinds of data.
The really big concern is in data centers where multiple, sometimes hundreds of websites are on one computer. And if one of those sites gets attacked, then any site on that computer could be vulnerable because it's all running on one processor.
Right. And you also want to be very aware that and check with if you have a website of your own that's hosted somewhere else, GoDaddy, Bluehost, one of those up there, then you might want to check with them and see if they have protected themselves against MDS attacks, and give yourself some assurance that the company has given you protection. I'm on Bluehost, and they've done all kinds of things that they say they've done, but I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. A lot of hosting sites are full of all kinds of flaws.
Mm-hmm.
That haven't been taken care of.
It's just the nature of the beast.
Yeah.
And if you're self-hosted, that's even worse.
Well,
then
right.
You have to load all the updates yourself.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Right. We're gonna be seeing that at most universities. I'm sure they're gonna be. I haven't even checked over the last day or two, but I'm sure that there are. They're at the very least prepping right now. The big problem, of course, is that if you're at home, you've got one system, you can update it today.
Yeah.
If you're managing 10,000 systems, you better have a plan.
That could be a little more of a challenge.
Right. You better have a plan in place, not only for doing it, but for what do you do if it screws up?
Mm-hmm. So, a recovery plan.
That's exactly right. So you want to be very careful and very aware that your hosting service or your university or your whatever may be a little bit slower updating than you yourself would be. And that's completely understandable as long as they've got a plan and they're working toward that plan and they're going to do the updates shortly.
Well, that's like with our company. We're still running a lot of our systems Windows 7.
Yeah, that's a problem.
And then right now with the software that we're using, we're having a number of issues. And they keep saying, well, why all of a sudden? I go, because, hello, we're running on old software. Everything else is moving forward. And so is this program, to do the updates and take advantage of all the stuff. Programs expect bigger, faster machines. It's right. Just the nature of the beast. That's the way it's been since day one of computers. Everybody wanted to do it bigger, better, and faster.
And many of them are expecting Windows 10 now.
Mm-hmm.
And there are differences between 7 and 10.
Yep.
And so they may not work well under 7 anymore.
Right. Oh, and this one is definitely
not. Get over it.
Well, the other thing is, too, is we got all these new tablets in. And again, these tablets have a newer version of the software.
Right.
Embedded on that. Well, let's go back to the old ones. You know, you can't.
You can't.
You know, we got to keep moving forward because going backwards is not an option. You're just opening the whole company up for, you know, terrorist attacks. Yeah. I mean, they could get in there. And I mean, from
for the data that you folks have?
Oh, that would be monumental if somebody got in to hack that. Oh, I don't
know. You guys must be under HIPAA, so you've got all kinds of regulations.
Yes, we are. And luckily, you know, our database, though, we have to connect to the cloud. And again, we don't have the best of network services without mentioning names. But
and there have been so many escalated cyber attacks that are state-run. Is the only way they can figure it out. There's a new one they found called Taj Mahal that's been running for at least 3 years and attacking governments and power plants and all kinds of you know critical infrastructure stuff. Kaspersky just found Taj Mahal a few weeks ago, and these things are running all the time and we don't know it's there, even when your systems are being updated. And when you're running something as old as Windows 7, where you're not getting those security updates anymore,
right?
That's even worse.
I'm sure. Don't call us. Windows 7 isn't being updated anymore, yeah. Except for certain egregious things. There is an update that's coming, and I'll talk about that in the next hour. But
although what's nice is
don't call us. You're not getting.
Well, updates. They haven't removed all the old updates yet. I just installed a new Windows 7 VM, Service Pack 1, and then I do check for updates. 274 updates have been released since Service Pack 1.
Right.
And but they're still there.
They stopped 5 years ago.
Right. When are they going to remove them?
Well, that's why I admit I still have a Windows 7 machine. There is no way in God's green acres I would even consider putting that onto the internet.
Right.
No way. Right. Uh-uh. Right. Ain't happening.
All right. That music tells me you've wasted a whole hour of your Saturday with us. But that's okay. You're going to get another chance to do it again because we're only halfway through this nonsense. Take a little bio break for yourself. I know I will. And we'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We're 29-plus years into this nonsense. Coming up on 30, that's going to be fun. And we'll see you in just a few more minutes. With the second hour of Sound Bites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we can continue to be solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's CGI Rochester International Jazz Festival, Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I guess, still Dave Enright.
Still.
And that would make me Steve Ray.
Somebody has to be.
Yeah.
Well, you were so confused at the beginning of the show, I figured.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait, are we at the right place?
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. While you're doing that, I will talk about the Windows XP patch that's just come out.
Huh?
There is?
Wait a minute, we talked about how we don't even want Windows 7.
Well, this is how bad this problem is. And it's separate, by the way, from the one we just talked about, the MDS issue that we just talked about in the last hour. This is entirely separate. There is a security hole in XP and 7 and similar era Windows servers that needs to be patched now. The cause is a bug in Microsoft's remote desktop services that can allow an attacker to take over your earlier generation Windows PC if it's connected to the internet. Not all machines are vulnerable, but the number of exposed machines, the size of the honey jar, as they call it, makes it likely somebody will come up with a worm shortly. And worms don't care who you are or where you are, they're going to take your machine. In short, if you have a PC that's running Windows XP, and that includes embedded XP, so every company on the planet running an ATM, pay attention.
That you know won't get updated.
Right. Windows Server 2003, Server 2003 Data Center, Windows 7, Windows Server 2008, Server 2008 R2. You need to get patched now and tell your friends. As of this moment, it looks like the patches aren't causing more problems than they fix, as it looks right now.
Yeah, but still in all, I mean, geez Louise, Windows XP?
Yeah, that's particularly remarkable because in the case of the Windows 7 cluster patches, they include a fix for a completely different security hole, which also exists, the so-called, and this is the MDS vulnerability. So if you have Windows 7, you get an update for both. And look at how far out of band these updates are. And there's still, you know, Windows support for XP ended, I think, sometime in the 1860s. And Windows 7 ended, what, two decades ago. So you need, if you're getting an update, you know how serious this is. The Windows patch bundling propensities, you can't fix one without dragging in the other. So for the Windows 7 and Windows Server patches, you can't fix the immediate problem, this wormable RDS security hole, without also installing a fix for a problem that won't appear anytime soon, and indeed may not even exist in the real world.
Well, I was wondering, though, how do you get other software, you know, like any antivirus software or anything else to even run, because most of them have all dropped the support for it.
Right, right, right.
I mean, Adaware and all the others, they're not doing files that will work with XP anymore. So you might as well just open the barn doors and let everything in and out.
Right. Now, before you make any changes, run a full system image backup. If you're running XP or Server 2003, you need to download and install the patch manually. The one you want is called KB4500331. That number in Bayonne, KB4500331. If you're running Windows Server, Windows Server 2008 SP2 or Server 2008 R2, you should install the May monthly roll-up. If you have an antivirus products from Sophos, Avira, Avast, AVG, McAfee, make sure it's up to date. Then follow AKB2000004, how to apply the Windows 7 and 8.1 monthly roll-ups.
So what was KB2000000?
Yeah, you should look it up. If you see KB4493132, the Get Windows 10 NAG patch, make sure it's unchecked. Do not check any unchecked patches. Those of you who insist on manually installing the security-only patches should proceed as usual. Just another massive vulnerability in Windows. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Now, this is going to start a spate of, well, my Windows 7 gets updated all the time, so you really are an idiot. No, it doesn't get updated all the time. Microsoft has said they're not updating it all the time. You get some security.
Well, if all the time means once a year.
Yeah, right. You get a few security patches, but no operating system patches and no update patches. And for vulnerabilities like this, they are pushing out a patch. But really, how much effort do you think they went into making the patch for XP or 7?
Very little.
Very little, because they don't care about those operating systems.
What it does show is how close the code base still is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, if you look at the kernel in Windows 10, it is the NT kernel.
Yeah.
It is the same kernel
that hasn't changed
from Windows NT.
But the thing that is, though, and that's why I don't think they're too worried about it, again, because so few folks are still running XP, but there still are some folks just because of, say, turnkey software that was written for XP, and that's the only thing they can run. Okay, I can understand that. But still in all, even if it's a turnkey system and you've got to have it to run this particular machine or that machine, do not put it on the network, the internet.
Right.
You know, all right, so it's got to run that. Fine. Just keep it. Just like I said, I've got a Windows 7 machine, and that thing doesn't even get close to the internet because I don't trust it.
Well, and particularly now, because Windows 7 is part of this deal. It's not just XP.
Yeah.
It's also 7. So you now know that Windows 7 has a massive security vulnerability, and that's why you never, ever want to put it on the internet again.
That's why right next to my, literally, that Windows 7 machine sits my Chromebook.
Yeah.
And that's what I rely on.
Yep.
Because there I, oh, because I got, matter of fact, another update. Mine just updated again, and it was no big deal. Okay, it wanted to restart.
Yep.
But I don't have
every couple of weeks.
I don't have to sit there and think about, the updates and all this other stuff. So I'm saving. I'm not getting spyware, malware. I don't pay for a stupid operating system.
That's right. And
that's the biggest thrill.
It doesn't interfere with what you're doing. It doesn't pop up and say, gotta restart now.
Yeah. The blue screen of death, remember that?
Yeah. You get a little arrow in the corner.
Yeah.
And the next time if you look at it, it'll say reboot, but you don't have to.
Right.
You can keep on working, and then when you shut it down, it on again,
it's happy.
It's happy.
Yeah.
I like some of the headlines about the story. Wired was saying Microsoft's first Windows XP patch in years is a very bad sign. Extreme Tech says, not dead yet. Microsoft issues critical security patch. Another headline, Windows XP gets a rare update thanks to WannaCry. Was the malware that went around last year?
Yep.
With a flaw in SMB, was I think one of the last XP patches because it was so critical. And Microsoft's post-retirement patched record, so 5 years after XP was officially discontinued,
right?
The last patch.
Last patch for XP was 5 years ago. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. Hi, Tom. What's up?
Hi. Yeah, you're talking about Windows and old versions of Windows.
Yep.
Just a general question. At this point today, how much of Windows, whether it's new or old, is part of is Microsoft's business at this point? Because they've got lots of other businesses now. They've got the cloud and a number of other commercial industrial type applications.
Right.
For Windows itself, what percentage of their total business is that right?
Well, they don't. Well, look.
They don't reveal it, perhaps.
They don't reveal it.
Yeah.
But we do know from their last earnings call, which is when they talk to investors.
Yeah.
Steve's got an actual chart of some sort here.
Yeah. So productivity and business processes are 13% growth. What's the market? That just gives the growth. That's all Wall Street cares about. So $10 billion in productivity, $10 billion in cloud, $13 billion in personal computing. So
personal computing.
More, yeah.
So that's kind of everything. They don't talk about the actual numbers very much, but what they do talk about is what they're going to do in the future and what they're paying attention to.
Yeah, 'cause Office.
And that tells you where they're making their money. And what Microsoft has said is that their Azure cloud, their cloud stuff, is where they're putting most of their stuff. High-end business stuff like servers and SharePoint and that stuff, and mail and things for businesses, they're putting a lot of money into that. But in terms of their personal computing, which includes Windows. And their Surface tablets and keyboards and mice and everything else, that's only, 13% of their business.
And Windows revenue was down 5%.
Yep.
Last quarter.
Microsoft is not, and again, one of the things that they have been telling their investors for 2 years is that they want to turn Microsoft Windows into a subscription service, because they're not making money at it.
So going forward, then, it's pretty clear that customer dissatisfaction is not going to be a motivating factor, at least as much as a motivating factor going forward, for them to improve Windows or to maintain it.
Yes, it is, but you have to understand, because Microsoft is a publicly traded company, their customers are their investors. You are the product that is given to those investors, that is sold to those investors. So Microsoft, in fact, only cares about you as much as it takes to up the money that goes to their customers, who are their the people who bought their stock. So that's why they want to go to a subscription model for Windows, because you aren't buying enough Windows, and therefore their customers aren't making enough money.
And in a bit, from a business standpoint, most of Microsoft's revenue is coming from the business subscription services, the Azure Cloud subscriptions, the Microsoft Office subscriptions. And so those are such a huge part of Microsoft, as they don't realize. Well, I don't realize that the consumer market almost doesn't matter.
Right.
The Office product, though, is directly connected to Windows, isn't it? It depends on Windows.
Well, it does. Yes, in many ways, you can run a solely web-based version. So I can, in fact, get to Office 365 from my Linux box, but it does not run as well as it does if I'm on a Windows machine, because it hooks to components in the Windows subsystem.
All right, so going forward, it's going to be kind of live with the dissatisfaction and just do the best you can.
Well, yeah, but,
or move to some other system that you like better.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. If you're going to stay with Microsoft, you have to understand that you are not in any. You're not even in the top five of their priorities.
Right. And what I always find a little bit ironic is in the beginning, Windows got to be so popular because of mistakes that IBM made.
Yep.
And so by having Windows on your company computer, PC clones were able to sell to the consumer market, so you could steal all the software from your company and use it at home.
I think a lot of us are guilty of that.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that it was better, it was cheaper.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Sure.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Yep. Bye-bye.
So, yeah, everyone's using it. It becomes the default standard, but everyone's using it because it was the standard. It's the standard because everyone's using it.
Well, it's the standard because you couldn't buy a laptop or a desktop without it.
Yeah.
Unless you went to Apple. So if I, you know, my desktop at home runs Linux, but I paid the Microsoft tax. It cost me a couple of hundred extra dollars to get a machine with Windows on it that I immediately took off. Now, I could have bought a laptop or a desktop with just Windows on it, with just Linux on it, or you know, bought a white box system from a manufacturer and then put my own operating system on, as I did the last three. This was just an amazing deal at Woot, and so I took it, even though it had Windows on it. But
wasn't there an ability for a while to get some money back from Microsoft if you didn't use the pre-installed Windows?
Yes. In fact, I believe Microsoft has now changed their end-user license agreement, but it used to say that if you didn't want to use Windows, you could turn it in for some money.
Well, and even on the other side of that, that was one of the problems in the OEM license agreements. So, you know, say Dell buys Windows for Microsoft to put on all its computers. If they have a model of computers that they're putting Linux on, which they do, you can buy it with Linux pre-installed, they still have to pay Microsoft for that computer.
Yes, they do. And
there were lawsuits about that back and forth, too.
But they do. And so no matter what you buy, you're paying the Microsoft tax. But even so, their revenues are down considerably on the Windows side of the house. Because people just aren't replacing them. The economy is not great, and so people are not replacing their computers or their phones or their laptops or whatever as quickly and as often as they used to.
Well, Azure grew 73% over last year.
But they need that back-end storage and back-end support.
Yeah.
And the other thing, though, is too, and I know that just from my company, the expense, I mean, to just like you say, turn around, go out and get, you know, say new machines with Windows 10. All right, boom. you're presented with two problems. One, you've got new machines and new software, and now you've got to train the folks not only on how that operating system works, but how it's the software that you're going to use for it also works on that machine. So you've got the expense of the machines and all this training that you've got to now do to get people up and running. Although and not lose any time.
Well, yeah, and we hear a lot from customers that they don't get the training they need.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah,
because that, well, it's just Windows. Everybody knows how to run Windows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it shouldn't be that different, but you can be surprised. They move stuff around and rename stuff, like programs and features, you know. Yep. And
well, just the other day I showed someone the screenshot key. Well, accidentally, I did a screenshot. It's, well, how'd you do that?
Yeah. Well, I had it took me easy 5 minutes the other day, a couple weeks ago, actually. Guy was talking to me about Linux. I said, let me give you a thumb drive here. Just give me back the thumb drive when you're done. He said, shh, because we were out in public. I said, what do you mean, shh? He said, don't tell people you're giving me an operating system. You're pirating it. I said, no, it's Linux. It's free. He said, what? I said, it's free. It's what now? He really, he could not get it through his head that there was a free operating system that he could just use. Because I had my laptop with me, and he really liked the interface and the everything else that I was using. He really liked it. He said, can I get that on Windows? I said, no, it's Linux. He said, how do I run Linux? I said, here. take my thumb drive. Very well. You can run it very well. But you know, people don't get it. They don't get that there's free out there. They don't get that they're paying for Windows no matter what they do.
Well, it's just like we keep telling folks with the Google products, you know, Google Docs, Google Photos, be able to put all your photos up on Google for free. And that's also, it gives you the capabilities by putting them up there that if, say, you happen to be visiting some friends, you know, and you want to show them the latest and greatest pictures. Oh, I don't have them on my phone. Wait a minute. Log into your Google account, you go to your Google Photos, and there they all are.
The other night I was out with friends. I was a social butterfly this week.
I guess so.
I was out last, Thursday night with friends.
Hot man on the town.
I was showing them some pictures, and one of the guys I was with said, you found that awful fast. I said, Google found it for me. I did a search. He said, you did what now? So I showed him, he said, oh man, I wish I could get that, but I have an iPhone. I said, no, you can run Google Photos on your iPhone and do all of this. At which point his son said, Dad, I'll do it on your phone later. Relax. I'll do it.
Okay. Here, son. Yeah. Set me up.
That's exactly what he said. Yeah. He said, all right, son, you can set me up when we get home.
Yeah.
It was very funny. And he had, it's that thing. People want pictures. They want to be able to see their pictures. A lot of people nowadays buy phones specifically because they have great cameras.
Yeah.
And in fact, one of the things we did was he took selfies of everybody, and he had to take it about five times. He was using an Apple phone, and he's not that technically inclined, but he kept forgetting to turn the flash on, or the flash was too bright, or we were too, whatever it was. So I took a picture with my Pixel phone, which has night sight, which automatically works amazingly well in low light, and just shared it with everybody off of Google Photos.
Yeah, it's just a great, you know, camera in a phone.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hate to say it, it's better than some of the old cameras that...
Well, and that's the new Pixel 3X and Pixel 3A. Pixel 3A and Pixel 3A XL, the $400, $500 phone.
People are really getting jerked about that because of the price difference and the quality of the picture.
Right.
Because, really, on a phone, how many other features can you add?
Right.
It's all about the camera. Because, basically, all phones can text... They can make phone calls, and they can search the web. After that, it's all about the pictures.
This year, three cameras is the big new feature. So yeah, does that mean next year there's going to be four cameras?
Yeah.
Well, you have your normal camera, your telephoto camera, and then your maybe a macro camera. And the next
wide-angle lens.
Wide-angle.
Panoramic.
Yeah.
Yep. I did a quick little chart from the Microsoft's quarterly revenue. It's about a third each.
Yeah.
For cloud, business, and personal.
Yeah. Only the real problem is they spend more time supporting personal.
Yeah.
And so,
because businesses have their own support teams.
Well, right. Yeah. Or it's all happening in the cloud. You get three guys who are doing the back end and you're done.
Yep.
But when you've got personal computing, you've got helplines and assistants and 500 people writing code and fixing code and dealing with code. And so you may make the same amount of money, but you net a lot less.
Yeah.
You know, what you gross is far less important, obviously, than what you net. And of course, they're not going to talk much about what they net, but we can see from where they tell investors they're putting their money that in fact the personal computing side of things is no longer Microsoft's focus.
No, not at all.
We see that, and that's just simply clear. So you know, if you're I still get people who say, oh, my Windows 7 gets updated all the time. Yeah, it doesn't, actually. And the very little that it does get updated is not really their main focus. They don't much care anymore. They want to make it a subscription service. They want you to be downloading it from the web. And in many ways, they want you to be running it on the web.
Well, the other thing, too, though, is, and I've said this before, when you go into a lot of these different stores that, you know, sold computers, before you could go in there and see one aisle after another of desktop computers.
Yep.
Now, if you go into a store, say like Walmart, you might see two or three. The rest is either laptops or tablets.
Yep.
That is the big surge, the tablets and the laptops. And laptops, again, if they're out, you know, out and about, Chromebooks are serving that purpose. Because, again, not having the spyware or the malware or the operating system that you got to constantly, maintain. They then do all their work. They can then have maybe one computer at home.
Right.
That they can put their other software and that on and run that.
Right. If you have a specific program that absolutely requires some operating system, that's a reason to get that operating system. Otherwise, you can do everything with a Chromebook. Why not save yourself the money and the hassle and get one? Listen, we're going to take a quick break, but don't go away. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great and Truly Grateful to You that we are member supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. I was talking in the last hour about the low-light camera in my Pixel. That's a picture in the dark.
Yeah, that was the picture with Matt Ray.
Yeah.
What are you doing out with my son?
Yeah.
Except he spells it wrong.
Yeah, he spells it. One of you spells it wrong. I'm sure.
Yeah, really.
And I'm sure it's him. But that's a low light. That's just.
Yep.
You know, they don't have much light there. And in fact, then I took.
I'm trying to. I want to read that.
Mysterio and Las Bermudas. The Bermuda mystery.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were at the Silver Iguana. Very nice place. And that's. I just took a picture because there was no light here. Yep. And it came out amazingly well. I'm constantly amazed by that camera. Anyway, I'm going to read a news item, and you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Samsung is still committed to an imminent relaunch of its super expensive foldable handset. The one that was supposed to have been on the market by now, but was yanked at the 11th hour after high-profile reviewers and tech outlets found a slew of problems with the Galaxy Fold, which it turns out was unacceptably fragile for a device with a nearly $2,000 price tag. Yes, $2,000 for a phone. Yeah.
And you thought Apple was bad.
Yeah, yeah. Suddenly Apple's $1,200 phone doesn't sound so bad.
Yeah.
I'd still rather have the $400 Pixel 3a and get what for a five of them for that price. We knew Samsung was still committed to the device because the company keeps telling us so. And we also know the company is still committed because it's racing to fix the sloppy work that dogged the first edition of the Galaxy Fold to ensure that it's finally ready for prime time. This new report walks through the myriad changes and fixes that Samsung has started bringing to the device. They include making the top protective layer of the phone now essentially part of the body instead of something that resembles the kind of screen protector that users instinctively want to peel off. Basically, they're going to tuck the ends under the bezel. Big deal. Removing that layer was mentioned as one of the causes cited for why some reviewers ended up with bricked out and nearly useless devices. Samsung has reportedly cautioned that the layer wasn't supposed to be removed during Galaxy Fold press briefings, but that fact apparently wasn't clear when the reviewers finally had the device in their hands. And those who went back and looked at the press briefings didn't see that. The Samsung is also reportedly trying to shrink the gap that existed at the top and bottom folds of the fold's hinges, where dirt particles and the like not only started inadvertently slipping inside, but also got lodged under the display and started causing problems. The new report says Samsung is trying to make that gap smaller, which is certainly a good thing. Oh, dirt gets under it, will make the hole smaller. Not make the hole go away or cover the hole. Just make it smaller, so smaller
it overheats,
bits of dirt.
So overheats more.
Yeah, yeah, that too. Again, we shouldn't wait too long to see if the changes make a difference in how the device is received publicly. It's a dramatically different new form factor for a cell phone, and today's report notes that mobile carriers in South Korea are testing the tweaked Galaxy Folds now ahead of what looks to be an imminent relaunch of the device. All right, so are you ready for the Galaxy Fold? Sure, it's $2,000, but it folds. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
It does mean you don't have to buy a phone and a tablet.
Well, ish. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's true.
There was an unprecedented retraction. iFixit, which is a company well known for tearing apart stuff and showing us the innards, tore down a Galaxy Fold. Apparently, they got a copy from a trusted source, they're saying. And Samsung asked that person to get it back, please.
Oh, interesting.
And take down the review, please.
Nice.
So iFixit said they were under no obligation. They considered it fair use, but they did anyway because apparently they were asked politely.
That's fair.
But they found that gap. I read that it was a 7-millimeter gap.
For those of you who don't do metric, 7 millimeters is a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quarter inch.
Yeah.
Ish.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was, they said they were really amazed at the engineering that went into the folding screen and how tough that hinge was between them.
Yep.
And the giant batteries that are in it, too. So a lot of the websites that were talking about the teardown, they've just got some of the pictures that they were able to capture before the teardown was removed. But the iFixit said they hope when it actually goes on sale, they'll buy one of their own.
Right, tear it down again.
This was a pre-release review copy. So it's going to be interesting to see from their standpoint what the release, because Samsung postponed.
Yeah.
They haven't quite canceled yet. Postponed the release. Indefinitely. And so we'll see what happens to the re-engineered, version B when it does come out and what the differences are.
$2,000.
That's American money.
Well, and it's the first version, too.
Yeah, but still in all, I mean, like we said, how much can a phone do?
Right.
Other than, you're getting the Pixel 3s with the fantastic camera in them. And now that they got the 3A... That's
for $400, I'll buy five of those, thank you very much.
Yeah. And, because, again, the only thing I wish they would do is, again, we've debated this back and forth, is don't worry about making it thinner. Most folks throw a case on it anyway.
They don't care about that.
Give me a couple millimeters thicker and give me a bigger battery. Since the battery, like you said, can't come out, then give me a bigger battery that will last longer and not running out and look at, oh, shoot, I'm getting low. I'm down to 24%. Boom. I got to plug it in to quick charge it up.
Yep.
Well, no. Give me the little bit thicker, and I could be a very happy camper.
That's right.
Several other companies also have folding phones coming. Huawei is one of the more anticipated ones. But
not here in America anymore.
That's true, yeah. Samsung, sort of, I guess, gets the record for the first one that almost shipped.
Yeah.
All the other ones have just been showing at trade shows. They haven't actually announced a ship date yet. See, Xiaomi has one, TCL has one, LG's got one. So there were a lot of them were shown at Mobile World Congress a few months ago, which is the big annual cell phone show.
And Lenovo just showed off a laptop, a folding laptop. You it looks like a regular laptop, but you open it up and it's all screen, and you can open it up like a tablet and do tablet things on it, but you can also keep it half open like a laptop, and it shows a little keyboard on the screen. So like the Apple, like the iPad keyboard, you can type right on the screen. I think typing on an iPad is the most horrible experience I've ever had in my life.
Oh, really?
But now you can do it on a Lenovo, too.
There's no feedback. You're just typing right on the glass.
And that's bad for carpal tunnel, too, because there's no give. That's all.
Nope.
It's not good. It's not good for you. But you can do it, and Lenovo's got one that'll do it, too, now.
There's a company that makes a keyboard, which is 100 little tiny screens.
Yeah.
Instead of a physical key, it's a screen, which is kind of neat, because then you can put anything you want on the screen.
Or change the colors or, you know, whatever you want to do.
And so each key can be a different language if you want. But there have been prototypes shown of keyboards that are just all glass. So like having, the bottom of your laptop, instead of it being a keyboard, it's another screen.
Yeah.
And so now this Lenovo folding one, the whole thing is one screen.
Right.
So you open it up and it's one giant screen. That's kind of cool. But will it work?
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the question. What's the fold like? How many times can you fold it? Yada, 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 right? So, I don't know what else to say about it until we start seeing them. But right now, what we've got is the same old with a fold in it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm waiting. Motorola has shown the new Razr, which is the old flip phone. But when you open it up, it's all screen because it's a foldable screen phone, it's that same old form factor. I want to be able to unroll the screen or spread it out on the back of my hand or, you know, something other than, it's a phone and you can open it up and now it's a bigger folded up phone.
We've given up on our flying cars. We just want a foldable phone now.
Well, one thing I got to mention, and this is a little off track, but still with new computers. I am very proud of this one coach at the school. I went to pick up this one young man, and he's there with his dad. And the kid's saying, no, I don't want to go to basketball practice. And the coach's going, why? What do you want to do? Go home, play on your new computer at Fortnite? And the kid goes, yeah. And dad goes, yeah, no, you're not getting out of practice because you want to go home and play on the computer. Get outside. This coach is all about getting kids. He goes, that's the whole trouble. Too many kids are sitting around on their computers, even with their phones, and saying what we've been saying for a long time. They've got their face buried into their phone. They don't look around and react with other folks.
Right.
And this guy is all about, no, bury that phone or I'm throwing it halfway across the room. Well, good for you. I had to congratulate him. And the dad said,
the dad
stood
up too.
Dad said, oh, heck no, you're not getting out of prayer just so you can go home and play on a computer. It's great to see parents are starting to finally, react to this and do something about it.
Yeah, good. In the meantime, while Dave picks up this next call, I'm going to mention once again, Fran Younger is doing it again, donating her time and expertise to help train cardiothoracic surgical staff in Tanzania. Her husband, Bruce, is going along because, hey, Tanzania.
You can go to the sets for Star Wars.
That's true. And he'd like to bring some computers for the children to use while they're recuperating. Because they're for recovering children, nothing fast-paced or high-powered is needed. These kids have just had heart surgery, so nothing fast-paced or high-powered is needed. Something to play simple games is fine, although some of the staff wouldn't mind something that the documents and spreadsheets do. Fast-paced, high-end games tend to be monopolized by the older children, leaving the younger ones out in the cold. So any old but definitely working computer is the sort of thing he's looking for. Because they will not have internet access there, certainly an XP or a Windows 7 machine would be fine. But please put some nice kids' games on it before you hand it off, because that would be, because they don't have any way to put stuff on it. And you can find out more information about this at both the Jazz 90.1 and Soundbites websites. Thanks. And in the meantime, we'll go to the phones and talk to James from Rochester, New York. Hiya, James. What's up?
Oh, yes. I have a question. I have Windows 7, and they give me repeated security, monthly quality roll-up updates.
Yeah.
And last month, I was not able to install it. Well, actually, it installed, I believe, but the computer would not restart.
Yep.
What is that?
First, you're not getting high-end quality updates for Windows 7.
Uh-huh.
You're getting some updates that Windows reluctantly and begrudgingly backdates.
Are they necessary?
Yes. Windows 7 is riddled with problems. Mm-hmm. If you're going to... Well, they're only necessary if you're going to use it on the internet.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, then you've got to... problem. But the issue now is, if it's been damaged, you might find someone who's willing to help you repair it, but finding the information on the web or doing it yourself is just getting harder and harder to do, because Microsoft has stopped supporting Windows 7.
But I've installed these every month for the last 2 years.
Yes, you have, but you do not get all of the available updates. You only are getting some of the security updates. And one of the problems we're finding is that while Microsoft may be sending you some of the high-end security updates, some of them don't work well without the other updates that you're no longer getting. They're certainly not updating the internals of the operating system itself. So when you've got something like this MDS thing we talked about earlier, you are not getting the updates. That's why Microsoft has taken the unprecedented step of putting out that update out of band for Windows 7 and Windows XP users.
Why, for the first time ever, did the computer not be able to restart after the installation?
Well, there's 100 reasons. It could be that it's a Windows 7 machine, so it's not new. It could just be that the last update and installing taxed it a little too much and it died. It could be that the installation didn't go well.
Download didn't go well.
The download didn't go well. It could
people,
be, you know.
People have problems installing Windows Update all the time.
And especially if you're doing updates and you installed other programs. Other programs, you know, that were working fine, now all of a sudden you do the update and you go to restart them, they can mess things up too.
You may be able to download those updates manually and install them one at a time.
You can't even restart the machine.
It may have been a combination.
Well, that's the thing.
If you can restart less known config, you can back out of those updates.
Well, right. What I'm saying, though, is say he's got Adaware, one of the virus programs, on. He does the update, the machine wants to, you know, restart. So it's updating with the file, you know, the new updated files, but it's trying to load programs that were running before, but right now will not work with the current update. Say like AVG or one of these other spyware programs, that because of their files, they might not mesh well
right
with the update, and it's locking the system
up. So, James, when you say the computer will not restart, what actually happens when you turn it on?
The computer's working fine, and it's just that I can't get the updates put on it.
Okay, that's different from it can't restart.
No, it gives me a message to go to do something, and it takes about 5 minutes, and then it gets itself restarted. But I'm not able to install those updates.
Well, you have to see what the message says and do what it's telling you to do. You may be able to install the updates one at a time instead of installing them all at the same time.
Or maybe you need to turn off your antivirus to install this particular set of updates.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm going to try those two things.
Well, the first thing to do is to actually read the error message.
But the message is just another way to get the computer to restart, but it doesn't load up the updates.
Okay, so it says something. So do you get a little kind of menu that says
to do a couple of things, and
like
just,
last known update.
Yeah, and it gets the computer back going, but the updates aren't put in it.
Right. What it means is that there is some incompatibility with those updates. It may well be because your antivirus thinks they're a problem. It is blocking them. So turn off your antivirus before you install the updates. But beyond that, it could just be a bad download. It could be the simple fact that whatever version of Windows 7 you're running is just not compatible with the updates.
Yeah, I also have Kaspersky antivirus stuff.
Yeah, turn that off and try to reinstall the updates again.
Sometimes the antivirus program blocks what an update needs because a virus installing something is very similar to a real program installing something.
Right.
So I'll try turning the Kaspersky off and doing it.
Right.
Yeah.
Give that a try.
And then remember to turn it back on.
Right.
I will. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, a lot of people have trouble uploading or installing Windows 7 updates or any Windows update period all the time. Wasn't it a couple of months ago the Windows 10 update failed horribly and deleted all your personal data?
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing.
And that's Windows 10, which is supported.
You go ahead and do the install, and that seems to go all well, and then it wants to restart. So it goes ahead and restart, but then all those other programs that have to start on startup that were working before now might not because they've got issues.
Right.
Because it's not going to work with that version of the update. And as it is, you're running on borrowed time anyways with a lot of those programs even working with Windows 7.
Yeah, I've mentioned this before. I've now got the Ask Nick phone app out, and I did a post on there about Windows 7 is really dead honest. People hated it.
Mm-hmm.
Hated it.
Oh, they're going to fight you tooth and nail.
They're going to fight you tooth and nail. And, you know, they're saying, but I'm still getting updates. No, you're really not. And
mm-mm.
I explain all that in the post.
So,
but they just see the updates come down. So they want to be, you know, lured into a false
safety net. Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So
that's
the last patch update, I'll find the list here.
Yeah.
Microsoft fixed 74 critical updates in Windows 10.
Yeah.
Windows 10.
None
of them for Windows 7.
Right. There were none of those updates for Windows 7. The only thing Microsoft patches in Windows 7 are some of the critical updates, not even all of them, just some of them. People need to understand that. You're perfectly allowed. Run any operating system you want. Just don't pretend that it's updated because it is not. All right. That's it. We're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. If you called in at the end of the show, you probably didn't get on, so please call earlier and more often next week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I probably should thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. We'll be Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow, so you're pretty safe. And we will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, hurtling headlong into our 30th anniversary. That's right, Soundbites, right here on the Truly Great. I'm truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in 166 hours.